The McIlvaney Weekly Commentary, covering monetary, economic, and geopolitical news events. Now here are Kevin Orrick and David McIlvaney.
Welcome to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. David, this year again, you got a chance to just sit down in a relaxed way and talk to some old family friends, people who nationwide and actually worldwide are respected for their technical market analysis.
Kevin, going back many decades, my dad and I visited Pam and Mary Ann Eden down in San Jose, Costa Rica. They've lived there for decades, and I must have been 12 years old. I remember sitting on the veranda sharing a cup of coffee, and as my dad was discussing charts and graphs and things that were happening in the market then, things that they anticipated in the future, looking at both fundamental analysis and technical analysis. And it was an interesting conversation, Kevin, because, again, that was decades ago, and it's the same kind of thing that they're producing today through their Eden forecast. And it trusted enough to have taken on the responsibility of publishing Harry Schultz's letter once he retired from writing that every month.
Well, they're good friends with Richard Russell as well. I mean, the people that they know, I mean, if you just listed them, it's the who's who of analysts.
We're a small collection of people, Kevin, who've known each other for 30 or 40 years. And so it was nice to sit down with them again. And we talk about interest rates and some of the fundamental things in terms of interest rates being down and bond prices being up. We talk about the gold markets. We talk about equities. And, towards the end of the interview, Kevin, we talk about change and some of the things that we can anticipate leading our families through and trying to share with our children and grandchildren, leaving not just a legacy of things and stuff and money, but of ideas and of fortitude and of character. It was a good conversation. Glad to have them on the program again this year.
Well, and I know, David, I look forward to every Wednesday when they publish just a simple one-page analysis of what's going on. I mean, they don't say more than they need to say, but boy, they have been accurate through the years. I'm looking forward to hearing the interview.
The major interests that we have, you look at the credit trends that have been in place for the better part of 30 years, an expansion of credit that's fed into an asset boom, both in the equities markets and in real estate, not only in the U.S., but globally. Credit is certainly more constrained today. There's major impacts into various asset classes. Equities have gone nowhere for 10 years. Maybe that continues, maybe it doesn't. We can look at things from a fundamental standpoint. We'll explore a little bit with both of you this afternoon, the technical side. You know, what do you see, and pick where you'd like to start, but the bond markets, U.S. Treasury markets, the gold market, the U.S. equities markets, from a short-term perspective, from a long-term perspective, as you're analyzing charts, where would you suggest that we are in terms of the mega trends? Where might we go from here?
I think the bond market surprised many people this year. I think more people were against a bond bull market for their forecast for this year. And so that was a surprise for many. But when it started becoming very strong in the early summertime, we think that the trend is, since 1981 on a technical basis, has been clearly down. And for the 30-year yield, we think that it's going to stay down as long as it stays below 4.5%. So that's our key number, actually, on a technical basis, where the trend is. And so that is a level we have always been recommending our subscribers and otherwise to watch that level. And as long as it's below, of course, now we see yields as low as they were in 2008. And prior to that, it was the 50s that we saw them that low. So this is a very abnormal spike in the yield now in 2011 and like in 2008. So we see that there's at some point the interest rate trend will change. And it's been kept down, and it looks like it will stay down, meaning bond bull market, for the foreseeable future.
On that point of rising yields, you know, one of the things that makes gold attractive in this environment is you don't have any place else to go.
Exactly.
That, you know, it's particularly positive, particularly interesting. Low to negative real rates of return allow for someone to opt out and just move to the sidelines. Gold ends up being, you know, a good credit bet and a great sort of holding pattern to be in. Would you suggest that as we see that change in trend in interest rates, that now you're talking about the clock beginning to tick for the gold bull market?
Well, what's interesting with that is that prior to 2000, gold and interest rates moved together, and that was the trend. The mega and the major trends were all, they moved together on that basis, and it changed clearly. And to this day, it's still the same. Now they're moving opposite. Interest rates and the gold price are moving opposite. So if it comes back into being, like when the mega trend changes again to the upside on interest rates, which is not there yet, but it looks like it could be coming up maybe for next year, then we'd have to see how it affects the gold price. Because in the past, they would move together. But yes, clearly, that will be a competition thing for the gold price. It's enjoyed a low-income environment for a long time now, and it's been able to really rise. But it's also rising for other reasons, too. So we'd have to see how that relationship, if it changes, or how it's affected it as the time comes on.
Your thoughts on the gold market, particularly, we've been in a bull market for 10 years. Yeah, I've spent some time on Bloomberg and CNBC, and they're surprised that we're still bullish, that it's already been through a bull phase, and in their mind is in a bubble. I gather that that's not your opinion, but what does a bubble look like in any asset class, and what would be the telltales, in your opinion, that yes, now we are in a bubble?
Well, we're clearly not in a bubble, and there's dozens of reasons why, and you know, some of them, the most important ones, I mean, I could rattle those off, but that would be very much talking about the fundamentals. But to give you the numbers, which is very important and kind of tells the story anyway, is that in bubbles, and we're talking the gold bubble of the 70s, the NASDAQ tech bubble of the 90s, the Japanese stock market bubble, in those cases, those markets rose 2,000 to 3,000 plus percent from bottom to top. This time, even though, yes, gold has been rising for 11 years, which gives people a lot of cause to say, oh, it's risen too far, too fast, too long, it's a bubble. But gold in that time has only risen 600%. Now, I say only, that's been a very good return. It's been year after year a good return on investment, but it's certainly not bubble standards. And so we think this bull market has a lot further to run. And just touching a bit on the fundamentals, the debt, the trillion-dollar deficits year after year, the spending, you know, and on, all the things we all know, the dollar losing its reserve status, all of these factors are coming into play. Globalization is a huge one. You know, the recession, the recovery from the 2008 recession hasn't been like normal recoveries in the sense of, you know, unemployment remaining high, housing still down. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of factors that are kind of what we call this debt lag hanging over the market. In the meantime, you know, you have the emerging countries. Well, they're not booming so much anymore, but they were. But there's a huge demand. There's a huge demand for gold. It's coming primarily from China and India, but also from all over the world. So these are all the reasons why we believe this bull market has a lot further to run. And if you're looking at the mega trend, it will stay up as long as gold stays above $1,470. That's the number we're watching, and it's far above that level right now. So, you know, we've always taken kind of a long-term view and just stay with it as long as the bull market stays intact.
So consistently, in the last 10 years, gold has gotten near the 65-week moving average.
Yes.
And maybe in 2008 it slipped below. Let's say that we did have another sort of deleveraging event, a couple of major financial firms implode, and the government scrambling, our government, some other government around the world, trying to sort of put their thumb in the dike and make sure that this doesn't get catastrophic. Well, we did see that in 2008.
Yes.
Gold broke through that critical level.
Uh-huh.
What would cause you as a technical analyst to say it may have, but the trend is not finished? I mean, is that where you combine technical analysis and fundamentals?
Yes, very much so. And nothing is black and white. And it did break. It was a temporary break, but it was a panic mode situation where everything went down. Stocks, gold. You know, it was just very much a reaction. And so then you kind of have to let the dust settle a bit, if you will, and then see what happens. And so that was what happened in 2008. And it was a panic. As you know very well, the world was, you know, brought to the brink And so it was just kind of a very abnormal situation. But as you say, that could certainly happen again. Could happen. It almost happened, you know, what, last week with the euro problems.
Right,
and
right.
So there's always something that, there that hangs overhead. So you've got to be on the alert.
I'd like to add something on a technical basis for gold. Yes, when it broke the 65-week moving average, 2008 was the low. And when it came back up above it, September of 2009, gold broke into a stronger phase for the bull market. It was a new phase when it really clearly broke above $1,000. That was in September, almost a year later. And since then, we have not had any kind of decline that's substantial. This decline in September was only 16%. And so we have been wanting it or thinking that it should go lower just to have a normal bull market correction. And it hasn't. And now it's popping back up. But we're still wondering if we're still going to get it. But if we don't get it, this is saying that we're in an explosive situation. If we see that 1900 peak clearly broken and stays there, we could clearly be in an explosive situation because it would be an extremely bullish bull market.
Well, it seems like that's characteristic of a latter stage, where normal patterns within a bull market are two steps forward, one step back.
Right.
It's constructive, but it's also harrowing because some of those corrections can be, you're asking the question, has the trend changed? Has something significant changed? The price is dropping. And that's been happening for the last 10 years. Moving into a third phase, you know, what we've described as a third phase for the metals, you're really talking about two steps forward and two steps forward. And
Exactly.
Technology stocks 1996, where they had already been described as extraordinarily exuberant, and that didn't keep them from doubling and doubling again. So it's, we've considered an annual rate of change in the neighborhood of 150 to 200% is one of those telltales for now you're seeing real momentum to the upside and perhaps something that's ultimately not sustainable, but where you've got 1 or 2 years excessively with 150 to 200% rate of change. Everyone's in that's going to be in terms of a gold owner. I know from our standpoint, and just to echo what you said a moment ago, the buying's primarily in Asia, primarily in Europe, primarily in the Middle East. We've been in the metals business for 40 years and are doing very brisk business with old clients, which is to say there's not a massive amount of new people with interest in gold. It's people who sometime in the last 30 or 40 years have taken an interest and have purchased maybe 2 or 3 ounces before and are now making a more significant commitment because they realize what's happening. But that's not really a new audience. It's a very limited audience. I don't know if that's 3% or 5% of the general population, but it's very small.
Once again, you're listening to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary at McIlvaney.com, McIlvaney.com.
Well, on the equities markets, you know, we've seen what can happen with equities when you pour fuel on the flames, so to say. The liquidity coming out of Europe, which has been the liquidity, the same kind of liquidity provisions provided through TARP and TALF and all of the different things that we've done here in the States. Do you buy that? I mean, or is that something where you say, no, actually, the trend has been sideways to down for 10 years, follow the primary bull markets and someone else play with the cyclicals if they choose to. But as a technical analyst, maybe that's just of interest, as just of much interest to you, the short term trends.
Well, the stock market's true. You've seen, if you look at it from 2000, like the S&P 500, the 2000 to today, you have had flat tops and lower bottoms, but those rises are very worthwhile, which is another reason we think why the global market has longer to go, because it's been camouflaged by the stock market's rises. Like from 2009 till just this year, you've had a decent rise in the stock market. As an investor buying there and to sell now, it would have done okay. And it would be good to diversify, and we actually went with the trend on that one. But now if it's going to come back up and say the S&P goes back to test its 2007 highs, still a major top formation on a big picture basis. But from now to there, you know, it could be worthwhile as an investor. But it's higher risk, definitely, at this point. Very high risk. And we see the emerging markets changing. We see that maybe the Dow will outperform the emerging markets in this one. Why? Don't know why, actually. But that's what it looks like.
That's an interesting observation. Well, with a lot of years of looking at the markets and analyzing not only the technicals but the fundamentals as well, as you all sit at the beach and ponder, when you're not at the office working hard, but just kind of collecting your thoughts and reflecting between yourselves, what are the things that have surprised you? What are the things that you think, I didn't think it would go this far? Or, you know, I'd love to be a fly on the wall just to know kind of what some of your reflections have been in the last couple of years. These have been very, very curious.
One surprising thing is no decent downward correction in gold since the financial meltdown of 2008. So that is something that was surprised us, actually. We've been waiting for those weaker moments to buy more, and we had to buy at a higher level. That was it.
Another thing that has been surprising is that despite what we were just talking about, all the debt and all the deficits, the spending, is that things still somehow plug along. I mean, not ideally, but, you know, things always seem to take longer than you would expect. And there's a lot of people that are, you know, for years have been talking about the gloom and doom and that everything's going to fall apart and we're going to have a great depression or a debt blow up and all these things. And they don't happen. That's not to say they're not going to eventually happen, but things just simply do take longer and you do need patience.
In the last few years, I've made a study of Latin American debt defaults, and it's interesting looking at the charts on interest rates, whether it's Honduras, whether it's Colombia, whether it's Peru, whether it's Argentina. Over several hundred years, what is obvious is the rates get lower and lower and lower, and then they get more and more desperate as time goes on. But if you're just looking at the chart, you would assume that things have never been better. Rates should reflect some degree of credit risk. And yet, it's at the moment where there appears to be no credit risk, that historically that's when the most credit risk exists. And what you see is you go from very low rates to very high rates very rapidly, at least in Latin America, where it's a snap moment, and it does take longer than you ever expected. But when it happens,
it's quick. No, and that's kind of Greece's story. Talking the latest example, this has been a long time coming. I mean, decades, really. If you Greece, and I'm certainly not putting down Greece because I think it's a beautiful country, but, you know, they've had a long history of kind of, you know, kicking back and enjoying the good life. And so, you know, becoming a member of the Eurozone and that, and that, you know, everybody still has their cultural ways, if you will. And so it's just kind of interesting that they were the first to go broke. And then everyone is trying to keep them from going broke and trying to help them in this. And the Greek people themselves are furious about the austerity measures and what happened. All this process has taken quite a long time. But then when it finally, just like what you just said, when it finally blew, it did. I mean, their interest rates went shooting up into, almost 100 and, almost 200%, I think, or 150. And now everyone's just, like you said, running around like mad trying to plug the dike. But then who's coming up next? Again, Spain, Italy, we know they've got bad reps, if you will. And so, but that's been a long time coming, too. So it's just very interesting to see that as these things unfold, I mean, if you want to throw the U.S. in the pot, too, everything does just take time.
Yeah, relative to Europe, I mean, our debt to GDP figures are either over or under theirs by 100%. It just depends on whether or not you want to throw in Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and some of our other liabilities, which are actual obligations but aren't officially counted. So we're either 350 or 550. I mean, so that variance of 100% over or 100% under, and Spain and Italy are closer to 450, right in between. But interest rates would imply that there is no risk in the U.S. market.
Exactly.
We've wondered if it's not a misjudgment, the concern being primarily for liquidity. In the final analysis, it will be a judgment on the basis of, you know, sovereign stability and solvency. As we wrap up, you know, there's a lot of things, again, that I'd be interested in knowing what you would reflect and what sort of advice you would give. I know your son's come into the business. If you were having one of those sage-like conversations and sitting down with children and grandchildren saying, you know, here's something that you need to know. This is something that we learned from this period in time. Don't ever forget it. What can we learn from this period in time? What do you think will be etched in history? And really, it's what we should walk away from as investors, or just as families, with a recognition or a cognizance of.
Excess comes to mind when you ask that kind of question. Excess, it started with, all got drunk on excess, meaning with the credit defaults and then the mortgage, not just subprime, but all prime, there was just too much leverage, too much excess. And that would be financially and personal people that got into too much debt. Like everybody just went spend, spend, spend. And so I'd say that excess is what we're starting to see, that like when you see those things in the future, another 30 years from now, be aware that that's not normal times and it's not good to be so excessive. I'd say that would be, when you ask that kind of question, that comes to mind. Is there something else that comes to mind?
You know, things are always changing. And so whenever you think you're real comfy and you're set in your ways and that's not the way to be. I mean, you have to be able to adapt to change. If it's this excess that Pam was just talking about, the pendulum swings and you've got to go with it. And so I think that's probably a good lesson. And the only thing that is inevitable is change and, of course, death. But things are always changing. They'll change in your personal life. They'll change in your business life. They'll change economically. Because some people are very resistant to change, and they fight it, and they argue, and they cannot believe that, for example, the world is changing the way it is, and they don't want it to. And, you know, it's kind of like too bad, because it's happening, and it's going to keep happening.
And I think another important thing is people are getting all the benefits that people get used to having from the government, and that's what's the problem. All the civil unrest is basically because they're getting things taken away from them. So those things are, it's better not to let yourself get too spoiled, because if it takes it away from you, it's very upsetting. And that's exactly why we see Occupy Wall Street. We see all the civil unrest growing around the world, because the developed world is in trouble while the East is starting to gain, and of course led by China. So this is a shift that's happening, and it's causing all this volatility, which is volatility personally and volatility in the markets, therefore. So that's the change we're seeing and feeling right now. And Greece is the best example, but we're going to keep probably seeing other examples. I don't think Occupy Wall Street's going away. Something has to give or head up before it goes away, and whatever it may be. That, I'd say, would be something we would tell our kids and grandkids.
Well, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. And the second year in a row, we've been able to sit and visit. Mm-hmm. And it's always a real pleasure to see you.
So, well, same here.
It's a great pleasure. And thank you very much.
You've been listening to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick, along with David McIlvaney, and our guests today, Pam and Marianne Aiden. You can find us at McIlvaney.com, McIlvaney.com, or give us a call at 800-525-9556.
This has been the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. The views expressed should not be considered to be a solicitation or a recommendation for your investment portfolio. You should consult a professional financial advisor to assess your suitability for risk and investment. Join us again next week for a new edition of the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary.